Is Sunsik Lee from the Perimeter Institute and McMaster University, and he is going to talk to us this afternoon about low energy field theories for non-Fermi liquids.
Okay, so I would like to thank Anton and Jan for organizing the symposium this year. So I'm going to talk about low energy effective theories for non-Fermi liquids, and today I'm going to focus on non-Fermi liquids that arise at anti-ferromagnetic quantum critical point. And this work was done with Shubhik Sir, who is in the audience. So one of the reasons that we can have a variety of zero temperature phases in condensing matter system is the quantum fluctuations induced by the uncertainty principle. So in the Hamiltonian, we have terms, competing terms. For example, the kinetic terms wants to have a eigenstate that is diagonal in momentum space, and that necessarily delocalizes particles in real space. On the other hand, interactions like Coulomb interaction wants to localize particles in real space, but these are not can be satisfied simultaneously due to the uncertainty principle. And depending on which term dominate, you get different types of state. If the kinetic energy is dominant, for example, if the bandwidth is much larger than the interaction strength, then you first like to diagonalize the kinetic term. Then you get the Fermi surface in momentum space, and you include the interaction perturbatively. But when the interaction energy is much smaller than the Fermi energy, the most of the scattering arises very close to the Fermi surface. And because of that, there is a very strong kinematic constraint that suppresses momentum changing scattering. As a result, electronic excitations created close to the Fermi surface have a long lifetime and remains as well-defined single particle excitations. And this existence of well-defined quasi-particle is the building block for the Landau Fermi liquid theory that explains a lot of conventional metals. In the opposite limit, if the interaction energy is much stronger, then you first start with a state which minimizes the potential energy, which typically quench the kinetic energy, and then usually you have some residual spin degrees freedom. And through some super exchange interaction, for example, this spins acquire some long range order not always, but typically long range order at zero temperature. And these two limits are very well understood. And our goal is to find some exotic states of matter that do not belong to these two limits. And such exotic states can arise at a quantum critical point. Suppose you have a metal, and suppose your metal goes through some symmetry breaking phase transition, in this case, some anti-ferromagnetic transition. And this transition can happen even at zero temperature as you tune some parameters in your Hamiltonian, such as doping, or pressure, magnetic field. In this case, it's a doping. And then if the phase transition is a continuous transition, then at the critical point, these fluctuations of order parameters become very soft. And electrons suffer from a strong scattering by this fluctuating order parameter. And as a result, it's very hard for single particle excitations to remain coherent. And as a result, you have some new types of matter which does not belong to a Landau Fermi liquid, and it is broadly called non-Fermi liquid. And our goal is to have some minimal theory that captures the universal properties of the non-form liquid state, say that arises at the quantum critical point. So suppose we start with a two-dimensional metal, and I have drawn some Fermi surface, hole-like Fermi surface, having the Q plate in mind, but the precise shape of the Fermi surface is not important. And suppose this metal goes through a continuous anti-ferromagnetic transition whose wave vector is pi pi, which is denoted by these green arrows. And then as you can see, on the Fermi surface, there exists a discrete set of points called hotspots connected by this anti-ferromagnetic wave vector. And these hotspots plays special roles because electrons on the hotspot can stay on the Fermi surface before and after scattering with anti-ferromagnetic fluctuation. And because they remain in the low energy manifold, this kind of scattering remains important at arbitrarily low energy. Okay? And electrons away from the hotspot necessarily scatter off the Fermi surface. Therefore, those scatterings are suppressed at low energy. Therefore, the low energy theory, the minimal theory that captures the quantum critical point should include the electronic degrees freedom near these hotspots and of course the collective anti-ferromagnetic fluctuations. So here I have written the minimal theory. It looks very complicated, but actually it's not that complicated. So the first line is the kinetic energy for the electron. So psi is the electron operator or electron field. So L and M labels different hotspots. So L runs from 1 to 4, M is either plus or minus. So there are 8 different combinations. And then sigma is the spin up or down. And then K0 is the frequency. And this E is the kinetic energy. Here K is the momentum measured with respect to each hotspot. Okay, so this is just the kinetic energy of the electrons. And this phi, three components of the phi vectors represent three components of the anti-ferromagnetic order parameter. And this is just the Ginzburg-Landau theory for the dynamical order parameter. Again, here small q is the momentum of the order parameter measured with respect to the pi pi wave vector. Okay. So the energy is minimum at q equals 0, which means the wave vector pi pi. And because I'm sitting at the critical point, the order parameter fluctuation is gapless, so there is no mass term, which is allowed by symmetry. And then this term is the interaction between anti-ferromagnetic order parameter with spin of itinerant electrons, okay? And more specifically, electrons can scatter from one hotspot to another hotspot, say from 1 plus to 1, from 1 minus to 1 plus, by observing or emitting the anti-ferromagnetic fluctuations. And this can happen between these four pairs of hotspots. It's included here. And then finally, this collective modes can scatter among themselves through this unharmonic term. So this is the minimal theory that you can write down. And this theory has the following four parameters. First, you have to specify the dispersion of the fermion near the hotspot, and dispersion is specified by the Fermi velocity. And here I'm assuming there is a fourfold rotational symmetry and some reflection symmetry. So if I specify the Fermi velocity at one of the hotspots, then Fermi velocities at other hotspots are fixed. And it's a two-dimensional, so I have two components of Fermi velocity. Say I have chosen the axis such that this is the direction along the Q vector, the anti-ferromagnetic wave vector, and this is the component perpendicular to the anti-ferromagnetic wave vector. And I can always rescale my momentum such that I can set the one component of the way for Fermi velocity to be one. So this is my choice. And then I'm left with one dimensionless parameter, which measure the ratio of the Fermi velocity in the perpendicular direction to the Fermi velocity in the parallel direction to the anti-ferromagnetic wave vector. So this is the parameter V. So in general, this hotspot and this hotspot connected by the anti-ferromagnetic wave vector do not have to be parallel to each other. And that's because in general, V is non-zero. If V was zero, that means Fermi velocity is parallel to the Q vector here and here. That means two patches are locally nested. That's what V equals zero means. But in general, your Fermi surface is not nested. So V is not zero in general. And then C is the velocity of the collective mode. And then speed of the collective mode is in general different from the Fermi velocity. And then G is the coupling strength between the collective mode and the itinerant electrons in this term. And then U is the strength of the quartic interaction between the collective mode. So I have these four parameters within my theory. And it's a relatively simple theory, and it's a very natural theory to study. And this theory has been studied very extensively for the past 20, 25 years. And here's a brief history. And in 2 plus 1D, as you go to low energy, it turns out that these couplings between electrons and collective modes become stronger and stronger as you go to low energy. Therefore, the mean field theory that ignore the correlation or interaction qualitatively breaks down. So that is the first statement. So therefore, in order to understand the fate of the system, one wants to introduce some small parameter to control the quantum fluctuations. So people try to artificially increase the number of flavor, say, assuming there's some extra orbital degeneracy that runs from 1 to n. And in usual critical system, like bosonic critical system, large and limit, usually the mean field theory works. And then you can try to include 1 over n correction systematically. However, it turns out that in the presence of the Fermi surface, the quantum fluctuations are not fully suppressed, even in the large n limit. So to this day, the solution in the large n limit is unknown. So therefore, the precise nature of the non-Fermi liquid state that arises at the anti-ferromagnetic critical point still remains unknown. And that is due to the lack of control over the strong coupling, over the quantum fluctuations caused by strong coupling. So therefore, it is desire to deform the original 2 plus 1 dimension theory in certain way and introduce some additional small parameter to solve the problem in one limit and include the effect of quantum fluctuation in a controlled manner. So our strategy is to use the space dimension as a tuning parameter. And this goes by the name of dimensional regularization. And although dimension is not something we can tune in reality, you can tune it as a mathematical parameter. And this kind of program has been very successful in understanding critical phenomena in bosonic critical system, such as Ising critical point. You start from four dimension and then solve the problem in four dimension and then continuously tune the dimension below four dimension by epsilon you use epsilon as a small parameter. And surprisingly, such epsilon expansion has been very successful in describing qualitative and even some quantitative nature of 3D eigencritical point. So that is the hope. However, this kind of dimensional regularization has been implemented to the system with Fermi surface only very recently. Okay, so that's what I'm going to describe here today. So the most naive extension of dimension is, say, to go to three dimensions, start from two-dimensional matter and go to three dimension. And then, accordingly, the Fermi surface dimension also increases. The Fermi surface become two-dimensional manifold in three dimension. You can study this kind of anti-ferromorphic transition in this kind of matter. However, this has additional complication due to the fact that in 2D, you had a discrete hotspot connected by the Q vector. But in the presence of two-dimensional Fermi surface, you have now hot lines. It's an extended manifold. Okay? And as a result, the size of a hot line, which is proportional, which is the order of the Fermi wave vector, enters as a new scale of the theory. So in three-dimensional theory, you have additional scale. So you don't have a single parameter scaling. So therefore, this theory actually turns out to be much more complicated than the theory of hotspot. So therefore, instead of doing this, we took a different strategy where as you go to higher dimension, you increase the dimension of space, but keep the dimension of the Fermi surface to be one. So it's like in three dimension, your momentum space is three dimension, but your Fermi surface stays as a one-dimensional manifold. It's like a line node embedded in three-dimensional momentum space. And there are different ways of realizing line node in three-dimensional space. And one way is to start with the usual two-dimensional Fermi surface in three dimension, and then turn on some ordering, such as P-wave charge density wave in this case. And it's a P-wave, that means the gap vanishes on some plane. Okay, in this case, it's a PZ wave. So gap vanishes at KZ equals to zero plane. And away from that plane, the Fermi surface is gapped out. But on the plane, on the intersection of the plane with the original Fermi surface, your gapless modes survive. And that gives you a line node embedded in three-dimensional space. So although I have not shown here, you can write down the theory defined in general dimension between 2 and 3. So in 2D is the original 2D Fermi surface coupled with the anti-ferromagnetic collecting mode. In 3D, it's a line node embedded in three-dimensional momentum space, again, coupled with some anti-ferromagnetic collecting mode. Okay? And it turns out that in 3D, the coupling between electron and collecting mode become marginal. So quantum fluctuations are marginally important. So you can solve the system exactly at three dimension in the IR limit, and therefore and then we can lower the dimension continuously by a small amount, and we can use this epsilon as a small parameter to control the quantum fluctuations. And the hope is that this non-Fermi liquid behavior captured by small epsilon qualitatively captures the real physics in two dimensions. That is the strategy. So we included the quantum fluctuations to the leading order in epsilon. So I have drawn some Feynman diagrams. For example, here the solid lines represent the propagator of electron, and this wiggly line represent the collecting mode. So here, as electron propagate, due to the interaction, it changed the momentum by emitting some collecting mode, just like a vortex. And then after a while, this electron reabsorbed this collecting mode to go back to the original state. And because of this quantum fluctuation, the kinetic energy of the electron is modified. Okay? And then the result is that because interaction try to maximize the phase space for the scattering. And that is, as a result, the Fermi velocity, the perpendicular component of the Fermi velocity V becomes smaller and smaller as you go to low energy. And that is due to this kind of process. So as I said, V is the Fermi velocity, which is perpendicular to the anti-ferromagnetic wave vector. So as V becomes smaller at low energy, that means as you go to low energy, this part of Fermi surface become more and more parallel or anti-parallel to this part of the Fermi surface. So initially start with some angle, and as you go to lower and lower energy, this angle becomes smaller and smaller. And locally, this Fermi surface get nested. Okay, to maximize the phase space for the scattering with the wave vector Q. And as the Fermi surface get nested, now you have a particle Hall excitations, which is almost degenerate because you can create a zero energy particle excitation with different momentum, right? And then, as you can see, if this kind of diagram, this collecting modes mix with a particle excitation. So this, as a collecting mode propagate, it decays into particle Hall excitations of the Fermi surface. And as I said, as the Fermi surface get nested, there's a lot of low-lying particle excitation that mix with the collecting mode. And as a result, velocity of the collecting mode also decreases. Okay? That means interaction, so this parameter V and C are the parameters in the kinetic term. And the interaction tries to suppress the kinetic energy. Okay? But interaction does not just die, interaction fights back. And in particular, if you have a local nesting, then you have a lot of low energy particle excitation. And this low energy particle excitation screen the interaction. And as a result, because of the screening, this coupling between electron and collecting mode also goes down. So interaction tries to suppress kinetic energy, and kinetic energy wants to suppress the interaction. So they compete with each other. They want to suppress each other. The end result is that they all die. So this is the RG flow, meaning how the interaction and velocity get renormalized as you go to lower and lower energy. And no matter where you start, it flows to this point where both interactions and velocity flows to zero. So formally, in the infrared fixed point, interaction is zero, and also dispersion is zero. So you may say it's a non-interacting system. However, it's not quite a non-interacting fermion, because if you look at the ratio between interaction and kinetic energy, the velocity, the ratio stays finite. So kinetic energy and interaction go to zero, but as they go to zero, they maintain the balance, okay? And as a result, it's actually non-Fermi liquid state, although formally it's non-interacting. Although it's non-interacting, you don't have kinetic energy either, and the ratio is finite. As a result, you have some finite effect from interaction. And another important point is that you have a emergent locality. The Fermi surface get nested, and then the bosons also slows down and lose the dispersion in the low energy limit. That's why we call quasi-local non-Fermi liquid or strange matter. So if you look at the physical property, if you look at the spectral function at the hotspot, so you create electron, probe the electron at the hotspot, say through RPS, and you ask what is the probability for the electron to have some energy. In the form liquid, you have a delta function peak, but now instead of delta function peak, you have a power law singularity. And this power you can compute order by order in epsilon. And then this non-form liquid fixed point is stable. In other words, there's no relevant perturbation, but some fluctuations are enhanced by interaction. And the one that is enhanced strongest is some types of charge density wave that involves the modulation of bond strength. That is the strongest one. And the second strongest one is the D wave superconductivity, and equally strong one is the pair density wave. Okay? So this size of the letter is meant to indicate the strength of the enhancement. So of course the real interest is in 2D, and we don't know the concrete answer in 2D because in order to do 2D, we have to push epsilon all the way to one, and then high order terms are important. This is only the leading order term. And here we have two scenarios. So I just said near three dimension, when epsilon is small, this non-form liquid is stable. And one scenario is that this remains stable all the way to 2D. And this happens if no operators become relevant as epsilon goes to one. And if that's the case, then in 2D, the phase diagram will look like this. As you tune some parameter, the quantum critical point will stay, okay, as a stable state of matter all the way to zero temperature. I think the more likely scenario is this one, namely near three dimension it is stable, but as epsilon increases, the anomalous dimension increases in various channel, and as I said, the charge density wave is the one that is more strongly enhanced, and one of them become system become unstable below a certain critical dimension along one of these channels. So if we believe the one loop leading order effect, then it happens in the charge density wave channel. That means in 2D, the putative non-form liquid critical point is covered by some other ordered state like charge density wave. But even in this case, at finite temperature above this dome, you will see non-form liquid behavior predicted from the scaling form that I mentioned. So let me just summarize. So by tuning the dimension, we can understand the non-form liquid state that arises at the quantum anti-ferromagnetic quantum critical point, you know, in a controlled way. And then as you go to low energy, the form surface get nested and collective modes slows down. So there's an emergent locality. And at the same time, there's a strong screening and the interaction also flows to zero. But these two kinetic term and the interaction term maintain the balance to result in some non-form liquid state. And near three dimension, this is stable, but shows some enhanced fluctuation in charge density wave and some superconducting channel. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks very much, Sensei. We have time for maybe one or two short questions.
So then what's the dynamical critical exponent at the fixed point?
Yeah, this one. So here, NC is the SUNC spin. So physical case, NC is 2, and NF is the fermion flavor. So physical case, NF is 1. So we compute it to the leading order in epsilon. This is the.
So why are you calling this quasi-local then?
Because the boson collective modes lose the dispersion. Yeah.
Given the location of the hot spots, it also allows umklapp pair scattering. How will it interfere with the antiferromagnetic scattering?
Yeah, actually, that's so important. You mean this kind of pair scattering from
right.
This part to this part?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pair
so,
of electrons.
Yeah.
Like in 1D, it leads to Mott localization.
Yeah, so this kind of scattering is actually important. And this is why the pair density wave is as strong.
It has been included.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah. It's as strong as the D wave. It's still irrelevant, so it still doesn't list instability near three dimension, but this kind of scattering is enhanced.
Enhanced. Thank you.
To the extent that it's as strong as the D wave superconductivity. So it's, and that is due to the emergent nesting.
Okay, and can you calculate things like transport properties, for example, the linear resistivity that you have in the non-Fermi liquid regime?
We haven't, but the difficulty is that for transport, electrons away from hotspot also participate. And one possibility is that these cold electrons away from the hotspot, kind of short circuit, dominate the transport properties. So those kind of transport properties not captured within this hotspot theory. And then there you have to include entire Fermi surface. And that has not been done yet. But that's an important open question.
Okay, thanks very much. Let's thank our speaker again. And let's thank all the speakers for a great session.